Basically, you can put money aside through this system, and it's tax deductible. So it's like 20 to 70,000 yen per month. So at the end of the year, you can have 200 to 700, 800,000 yen of contributions that are reduced from your taxable burden. And then you pay tax upon retirement when you re-get the funds. But tax on retirement pension
It's much less.
asset is a lot less than on regular income. So you're kind of deferring that and letting it grow is the idea behind it. So they are government tax sort of reduction schemes. So that I think they are great when you have the funds to do it. Any kind of investment first step, I feel it should be done in government supported tax beneficial schemes versus outside of those buckets. Maximize those buckets first and then go outside if you have excess funds.
Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajimam again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, that's it, folks. You've made it. The last episode of 2024, and what a fantastic year it was, both for the general market, but for us personally here at NTI as well. We've had our two annual summits in Tokyo, which keep getting bigger and better, and we've been proud to serve so many of you this year. Even as we've been swamped with existing clients, we have been assisting you in consulting capacity as you work with local foreigner-friendly realtors. And this dynamic caused us to discover, much to our delight and surprise, that there are more and more foreigner-friendly realtors in Japan who are now, as opposed to previous decades, happy and willing to work with foreigners in English and even remotely, as many of our buyers are not residing in Japan. Not all realtors are created equal, of course, and we don't always end up working with or recommending each of them who contacts us for this purpose repeatedly, but many of them do make the cut, and we're very happy to be building a very nice pool of those who do, much to your benefit as foreign buyers. So things are definitely improving in Japan's real estate market, at least as far as its openness to non-resident, non-Japanese-speaking foreigners is concerned, which again is very encouraging. Now, for this final episode, which is another JREP session, I've sat together with Tracy, Blanca, and Emil to discuss our personal preferences, philosophies, and best practices when it comes to investing, saving for retirement, and what this means for our respective businesses. So we talk about the difference between working and investing, how crucial financial literacy is when it comes to education, not just for youngsters, although that's where it should definitely start, but also and especially for adults. Specifically related to Japan, we talk about NISA and iDeCo, the two tax-free vehicles available to all residents of Japan, various investments assets and vehicles in our own individual portfolios, such as stocks and index funds. And then, of course, being the Japan Real Estate Expert panel, we eventually did end up talking real estate, which we're all invested in to various degrees, of course. So we talk about spotting investment hotspots, land banking, leverage, risk appetite and diversity. And then the last and most interesting part of the conversation was some brainstorming that we did related to our own businesses. So we talk about sticking to what we know and are best at, putting money back into the business and the business as an investment asset in its own right, how and when we have to charge for our time, understanding our clients and trying to make sure that they understand us, And finally, last but not least, Tracy shares a super useful resource for anyone interested in Minpaku, hotel licensing, or any form of short-term stay-related business, which she's the indisputable master of. So check out her spiel and then head over to the show notes to get access to this new and exciting product. If you're even remotely considering entering the short-term stay market here in Japan or elsewhere, you definitely want to get your hands on it. So all up, more of a bird's eye view of retiring, saving, and investing with a real estate focus this time, but not only real estate related. Enjoy this episode, preferably with an eggnog in hand or somewhere nearby. And I'll see you again one last time for this year on the other side. All right, Japan Real Estate Experts Panel, growing by the week. We might actually be at full capacity at some point in the near future. How have you all been?
Winter has finally hit us. And so I don't know about you. It's like I'm freezing. Yeah. So, yeah.
Air cons are on definitely here too.
I've got a little heater under my desk. What is it? Just suddenly got to like 9 degrees, max of 9 today.
And I've got a little. And with the rain always makes it colder and kind of all. So yeah, this is the weather. Normally, I would tell you this is the same bad weather.
Definitely.
We were that's actually a topic: maintenance of houses in colder weather climates. So we can get into. But we were talking a bit about retirement / inheritance / financial planning for the twilight years, right? Tracy was attending something. Emil had something to say about that too.
Yeah, I've been doing a course actually, and I've been doing a course with Retire Japan and just learning about all the different financial things that I've, even in 25 years, I've never learned about. So financial literacy is something that I'm really making sure that my child knows about, and something that I'm trying to educate myself about, because I just think as a human being, like, you know, as a salaried worker or whatever, it's not built for long life. You know, you do have to do something extra other than your salary, whatever you do, to just make sure that you're not living so that you actually don't have to work until you're 110.
Financial literacy. So we just, Kingsley and I, we just had actually a seminar yesterday at one of the international schools for children, because that's part of the portfolio that we do. And that's literally what we always tell people: you cannot rely on single stream of income, no matter what you do. Because if, you know, everything is, if you rely on one thing with all your expenses, then, you know, you're setting yourself up for failure and for problems. So having multiple sources of income is one thing that everybody has to learn to do.
But I don't think that real estate, like it used to be bricks and mortar. That was my parents' generation, you know, the baby boomers. Like, you know, that's how they secured their retirement. But nowadays, real estate is one element of an entire portfolio. And maybe Emil, you know, knows a bit more about that than me.
I love home loans in real estate, Japanese home loans. So for me, I do like having different stuff. So Japan has NISA and Hideko. So big shout out to Ben Tanaka at Retire Japan. Great guy. And he's also
here on the podcast.
Legend. And he's such a solid man. Like, he's such a good human being. So
And he's, you know, also a supporter of our podcast too and what we do. So I'd like to support him as well. So yeah, if you are in Japan, want to know all about NISA and Hideko. NISA is like a account for stock investing that is a tax-free umbrella, and tax-free being it's a government-supported account that allows you to invest stock-free tax-free in stock. And Hideko is sort of my understanding, it's like a monthly contribution you can pay out of your income that reduces your taxable income amount, and then so that gets deferred until.
It's a pension. So we've got Nenkin, but it's also a supplement to your pension. Yeah. I guess the Americans call it a 401k, like a self-managed 401k type of thing.
Yeah. Hideko stands for Individual Defined Contribution Scheme. So I've read his books. I think I signed up when he first published his book, right? So I like what they do. So But that's basically you can put money aside through this system, and it's tax deductible. So it's like 20 to 70,000 yen per month. So at the end of the year, you can have 200 to 700, 800,000 yen of contributions that are reduced from your taxable burden. And then you pay tax upon retirement when you re-get the funds. But tax on retirement pension
It's much less,
asset is a lot less than on regular income. So you're kind of deferring that and letting it grow is the idea behind it. So they are government tax sort of reduction schemes. So that I think they are great when you have the funds to do it. Any kind of investment first step, I feel it should be done in government supported tax beneficial schemes versus outside of those buckets. Maximize those buckets first and then go outside if you have excess funds. But onto my point, what I really like, what I think every individual who lives in Japan should do once you're at the stage, ready to be here long term, is use a Japanese home loan to buy your own residence. I think there's not much you can do which costs you pretty much zero out of pocket that can convert what you're paying for rent into equity, right? If you're paying 200,000 yen a month in rent and convert that to a home loan where you're paying 200,000 yen a month in mortgage and the interest is 30,000 yen, so 170,000 yen of what you're paying is equity, right? Principal, like forced saving. There's nothing you can do that's cost you zero to sign up because the bank pays for everything, and
Yeah.
just you go from 200,000 yen a month in rent to 170,000 yen in savings. It's just the best low hanging fruit. It's really hard to beat, in my mind. There may be some circumstances for individuals that they're like, okay, it may not be the most beneficial for them, but I think that's a unique set of circumstances. For the majority, it's definitely worth exploring at least.
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars. All in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
Well,
So yeah.
what else are you good folks invested in? I mean, obviously, each of us have got something related to real estate in one way or another, but I'm curious, what does your portfolio look like if you're thinking about long term, not like something that you're going to flip in a bit?
For me,
Perpetually
I
learn.
have,
Any of you, yeah.
I've got investments abroad. I've got investments in the share market in Australia. I have property in Australia. I have like offshore, one of those mutual fund type things. And I've also now got sort of Japan-based, those tax in NISA and iDeCo. But the other thing, as a small business owner, I get a small business owner contribution scheme, which is only open to small business owners. And again, that's it's it, you put it in pre-tax, like a salary sacrifice, I think the Australians call it. So you put it in pre-tax, and then it's paid out. So you put it in monthly, and it's considered part of your salary, but then it's paid out as a bonus on retirement, and then it's taxed at the retirement amount. So it's you're reducing your tax burden, but that's only available to small business owners. If you're solo, if you're a solo person, a solo operator, there's other things available to you. But if you're a daihyo or if you're an executive in a small business, then this is available. Blanca, I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No. I was saying, like, I love properties as a, everywhere, everywhere. So properties here, properties in Europe, properties in Africa, land, just lands and then apartments, things that you can rent to get monthly income are, for me, that's just, yes, you invest once. And then you just get monthly income out of it repeatedly. And then, whatever down the line, if you need to sell some of it, you can always sell. And the way it's going, the price of properties is going up significantly everywhere. So that's kind of what we do. Of course, some, different financial products. But when it comes to real estate, that's a big part of our portfolio. Definitely. And it's great, you know what it's like, we have them, like, even here in Japan, it's nice. Basically, even what we have, what we collect on rent, it kind of covers like the mortgage that we have on our house, so we live completely free. And and you still have the properties. So I love real estate when it comes to any investments. But you have to be sure that you do not need the money.
Yeah,
It's not
liquid, it's
something,
not.
it's not, yes, you when you're investing in real estate, you are investing long term. And the further, like, you can buy some lands right now. I'm still regretting we didn't buy land in Saitama, or like Nagariyama, because, like, honestly, that what things that were 1 to 3 million yen still 10 years ago, I think they are like 15 to 20 right now for plots of lands in that area, because that's the fastest growing area in Japan right now. So I'm still regretting that we have not done it. So I'm kind of like right now looking at things to where to kind of buy. That it's not Tokyo. Sorry, Emil, I know you love Tokyo, but for me it's like out of Tokyo but close to Tokyo, because those properties, they actually make a lot of sense as well.
When you spot a location like that that you think is going to turn into a hotspot, what do you do? Do you just buy land and sit on
Buy
it?
land. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Buy land. Because you can do a lot of things there. So you buy land, but you can also buy houses, but then you have to take care of it. And right now, if you just buy a land and it's going to grow in 10 years, you still have the land. You don't have to do that much. You can still, rent it out for farming or for whatever type of land it is. But if you buy an older house or you buy an apartment, before the area actually gets booming, you already have to renovate and everything and reinvest into that property. So if you are really investing in some, like, more of a little bit more remote area, buying a land is better, because then you are buying it in hopes of selling it then as a building plot.
You're paying land tax on it though, right? Like, even if it's not, like, so a lot of people in Tokyo just put like a car park on it and like have it,
Yeah,
to
it's a
cover.
different option. It depends where you buy it. I had the one that we built the last house on. It used to be my tomato farm.
Oh,
So
really?
Kingsley, yes, Kingsley was laughing that I have the most expensive tomatoes in the whole Japan. Because of course they were taxing us as a property. Nobody considered my tomatoes to be worthy of calling it a farm. So so it was, yes. But then we've, over COVID, we've built a house on it and collecting rent since. So, why not?
How about
Yeah.
you, Emil?
Go ahead.
No, how about you? What are you investing in?
So I like real estate, and then the passive sort of when it comes to stock, like NISA and iDeCo, that's passive, right? Put it in just I like just the global indexed funds, picking and choosing, trying to do that. I think over the years I realized that's a crapshoot. just and stressful, and you got to think about it, and I don't know what the right choice is. So I just go in there, a global mixed index fund for any of the Nissan Iveco kind of packages, and I know that's the guilt-free, risk-free option. But I guess when you're a business owner, a lot of the money goes back into investing in your business and development, looking to hire staff myself now to grow the business. So I think when you're a business owner, an entrepreneur, that's where I think I can produce the most amount of upside and return more than a passive investment. So it's a
That's what I was going to
combination.
ask about, and I'll let you finish, and then I got a few questions about that.
But then in terms of, look, like you mentioned real estate, right? Buy a bit of land and let it exponentially grow. And I like that idea. But the reason for me, where I like real estate as an investment tool is leverage, especially with low Japanese interest rates. So the 10 million yen, the $100,000, you can borrow half a million. So now I've got $500,000 investment, real estate investment growing for me. Whereas if I just put $100,000 in non-leveraged investment in real estate outside of Tokyo or a place that's a bit harder to get financing, it's okay. I can have $100,000 invested in some place that may double and my 100,000 goes to 200,000, or I can put it in Tokyo and now I've got a $500,000 asset that I only need it to go up 20% to make
Of
my
course. I
asset.
mean, you know what? You have to have a combination. You can't, again, this is what it is. You are never putting all your eggs into the same basket. So you do a little bit of that, a little bit of that, and then,
Oh, definitely, yeah.
that way, yeah, you never, that's why we also, like, all of us have properties in even different countries,
Yeah.
because, different countries give you different appreciations on property. We bought one property over COVID in Nigeria, and it had grown, I think, five or six times
No.
since we bought it. We could get six times as much for it
Yeah.
right now, right? So there
Yeah.
are things you have to diversify no matter what you're doing, whether it's real estate, whether it's your financial product, whatever you are doing, you have to diversify. And that's the key to doing anything anyways.
Yeah. So, I look at, I mentioned the buying your own house before. We had a guy who's selling his place. He bought it, like, it's one of those tower mansions downtown in Minatoku. He bought it for 120 million about 3 years ago. And now he's selling it for 170. And he bought it with no money down, right? So, like, I mean, it's a home loan, personal home. Now he's leaving the country, selling it for 170. And I think, okay, so you've lived in it basically and you've paid off the mortgage, but the interest was very low, right? You paid off for 0.5% on 150, well, like a few million yen over 3 years, 3-4 million yen over 3 years, plus management fee and taxes, etc. Let's pay 6-8 million yen, whatever it is, between 5 and 10 million over 3 years to own that property. And now you're making on that again, because it's price growth is feels a bit stupid how it's been in Tokyo the past 3 to 4 years. But now it's 50 million yen, $500,000, or whatever you want to, million yen, upside on that. And I don't think there's, like, it's when you leverage something, especially a personal home, right? I think it's great because it's no money down. But for an investment property, it's 20%. And even if you don't get that kind of capital growth, just because interest rates are so low, that's where the good deal is to be had. But yeah, even for investment properties, if you have access to the cheap investment loans, like 2%, 1.5 to 3% loans, and you're yielding, 4 to 7% for a investment, maybe hard to get 7% on a property that you can actually finance. Maybe like 5 to 6% is more realistic. That's where I see the upside. When you're doing cash only, I feel it might not be as attractive in Tokyo. That's when, as if some stuff you find, right, are in the other places where the yield looks more like 7% net or 6% net. Oh,
Six,
that's
if we're
pretty
lucky
tough.
these days,
Yeah,
yeah.
six, yeah, it's going a bit
But you're
outside.
forgetting one really huge thing, though.
How much are you saving in rent? Because you haven't, because you've got a roof over your head too. If you didn't own this property, how much would you have to be paying somebody else for rent? So there's that, like, just because you're servicing a loan a couple of million yen over whatever time, you would have been paying like 10 times that if you were paying rent.
Oh yeah,
So,
that's exactly what I touched on before. That 200,000 yen a month rent is now 170,000 yen a month for saving because it's paying off the principal. So sort of I addressed that before, which is why
And
I
you can
think
barely get
on the
anything for 200,000 a month anymore, right? In terms of
it's
like anything decent. So,
it's equivalent to about a now a 70 to 80 million yen loan. So if you borrow Hasenma yen, 80 million yen, which is what, like 500,000 US, 550 US, that monthly payment is at 200,000 yen a month, equivalent. That's principal and interest, and includes life insurance. That's my big kicker
And
now.
insurance,
My
yeah.
very thing.
That one, it's fantastic already.
Yeah, so free money. Ziv, over to you. What's your thoughts
What's
on
your
that? We
portfolio look like?
obviously like real estate a lot too, and we prefer to focus on Japan, which is what we know. We did have a property in the USA. We did have a property in Australia. We ended up selling them and buying more properties here in Japan. And we're also a mix of cash, entire mortgage, and also half cash, half mortgage on some of our purchases. And we diversify, obviously, geographically, socioeconomically, different types of properties, different types of tenants. Usually, Chikako is the more conservative side of us as a couple. So she's the one who usually comes up with the properties that we invest in. And then I handle the more adventurous part of our portfolio. So a little bit of stocks, a little bit of investing in kind of real estate related, but more like hospitality projects. Now we're going to be putting a bit into a digital nomad hotel in Koh Phangan in Thailand. We got some REIT stocks as well. So kind of hovering around real estate in various forms, which is where we feel most comfortable, but diversification within that.
One advantage we have, I think, is being, buried in real estate is we know it well. We get also, I think you start to grow an instinctive feel for what just looks good and what doesn't. And you're like, oh, this feels like disproportionately low or like good value. Right. And I try to pick that out for my clients when I'm looking at homes as well. Like I see a lot. I look, this is a, even if it's the first place that we see, I'm like, actually, this is really nice. We got five others we're going to view today. I don't think any of them will compare to what we've seen. And then they have to, for them, it's the first one. They think it's normal. And then they have to go through. So I think because we have that experienced eye, we're able to maybe to identify a few other opportunities that are like, hey, this is good. I think I should jump on this. And we don't feel as risk averse because we've seen so many. We've seen clients go through it.
We were
So I
talking a
think
bit
that's why real estate.
before Blanca came on too about like once you've purchased a few properties, it's not as okie-dokie. Like you're not as nervous about, a lot of people, if it's their first or even their second purchase, they're like, okay, but the prop, but we're gonna buy and we transfer the money here, and are we really gonna do that? With us, it's kind of like, yep, another one.
It's like, yeah, transfer $1 million to our, escrow account, and
It stops being money though, doesn't it? Right? Like,
it's still money, but I mean, you know what you're putting it into. We've already been through that. We know where that money is going. We know what it's hopefully going to generate. It's not as anxiety
It's
driving as.
Monopoly.
I get so many people like when we arrange the home loans and they're like, oh, it's a $1 million home loan. What should like, is it risky? Like, what if the bank goes under, especially when we're having the US like a year, 2 years ago? What if the bank goes bankrupt? Like,
It's a fair question. It is a
basically,
fair
and I'm like,
question, Japan. Yeah.
they are giving you $1 million. You're
Yeah.
holding your money, you're holding their money. I mean, that's a good situation. You have the house and the money. I wish they disappear and you're good.
Yeah.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in web solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company, Innovatius, is all about.
They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read, detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
Yeah.
What do you think? I was going to ask you when you were talking about the business. Does it ever come into your thought pattern? I don't know if an actual plan, but are you ever thinking about, okay, at some stage, this business will be an asset as well, because I'm not going to be working on it 24/7 myself. I'm not going to be working in the business. I'm going to be maybe, you know, directing it from above, but definitely collecting income from it. Or is that not something that crosses your mind at all? I mean, I'm definitely not there yet, but it's definitely something I'm thinking about.
Do any other the ladies want to speak to that first?
I think it very much depends on the business you're running. And we are the generation of business owners that I think our businesses a little bit depend on us as persons. So once you get out of the business, unless you can actually train your little mini, like your mini me.
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Yeah.
The business would actually die if you are not there. Yeah. So it is what it is.
No, if you want to treat the business as a potential income asset, succession has to be there. Yeah.
Then you have to train already right now. You have to start training whoever is going to take over from you and is then willing to actually pay you. Because otherwise that you will just train them and then they go, bye, I'm setting up my own. I mean, this is very tricky. Very tricky.
Yeah, there's a great book called E-Myth and E-Myth Revisited that really talks about that. If you are your business, the business doesn't operate without you, which a lot of consultants are really, then you don't own a business. You don't own a company. You own a job.
You own a job, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's it. Who is it? Michael Gerber? Is that the guy?
Michael Gerber, yeah. Yeah, he's a little annoying, but yeah, that like if you ignore all...
it's an old book, but yeah, basically you structure the business in a way, and although you have all the hats at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
you have to hire a COO, you have to hire this person, you have to hire this person. So
exactly.
You can't wear all the hats, but at least it's categorized.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's very much in my mind. I want to grow the business such that I can remove myself from it. And right now I'm the face of it and people want to work with me, but
I think
with the introductions, yeah, it's like that's, you know, trying to get a salesperson to be able to work. And, you know, I think I have to let go of the fact that I expect someone to also be a family man and or family person and have kids and understand the family needs of someone else.
Mm-hmm.
I do that. That's what I do. But I think lots of successful real estate agents and who want to work and who are genuine and want to help other families.
Mm.
And they may be a variation of they may differ to what I do or how I do it. I need to let go of the fact that they have to be a version of me and they are just their own
Or at least
individual.
if they've taken ownership of the brand that you've created. I mean, that's part of your brand. And yeah, so
You'll do
they.
better off selling your brand than, the business itself.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying for the realestate.jp.
I think we're kind of vaguely on the border of are you talking about potentially selling the business down the track? Or you're talking about owning the business but not having to work in it? That's what I was talking about.
So more so the latter, own it without with being able to work less in it, or more as maybe a manager rather than day-to-day operations. But again, that's far down the line. But I think, from that book, you in order to achieve that, it needs to be structured in a way almost that it is sellable. You are not the face of it, or people are not hiring you, they're going to your company. So yeah, it will be. So in order to achieve that, it has to be structured in a way that I think the business is sellable as its own entity, and that way I'm not the person. But that's not my goal right now. It's just the
I can speak
other
a little bit to that because I know some people abroad that have actually created minpaku or short-term rental property management businesses and have sold them. As long, I mean, for me, it's going to be challenging because my leases are not commercial, like they're not transferable. They're attached to my company. And so, or they're attached to a name, and so that's sort of not possible. But certainly, doing a short-term rental business with an exit strategy in your business plan is not silly because you've built up, you've collected a whole bunch of contracts with owners as a property manager, and that's valuable. That's a saleable asset.
You're essentially selling the business book. I mean, the person buying it
Correct.
may or may not adopt your methods and procedures, but they'll definitely be inheriting all the clients and
But your
providers.
customer list, and especially if you are building a short-term rental business, have your own database of customers, and be nurturing those, and have that brand that is so Tokyo Family Stays isn't attached to my face so much. I do think that it might be possible to sell that brand. I'm not ready now, of course, but I still really love doing what I do. But being able to have a potential exit strategy down the line is, it's not silly.
I'm trying to think about that. Depends on what type of work. The consulting work I still do very hands-on, but a lot of the customers that we're onboarding these days for management, for example, there is no reason for them to talk to Ziv every time they have a question, unless they're a very high-touch client. We do have a few of those, but generally, it takes time to get people used to that. But when the message comes in, you're like, I'm not sure about that. Could you email what's her name? And she'll let you know because she's hands-on and I'm not, right? So that's the first step, I think, for me at least.
Yeah, I think you can, Ziv, on your part, you can outsource, I think, or not outsource, you hire someone to do some of the admin tasks that take away from your, that they don't need your specific expertise. Anything that can have the system book
Yes, quite a few
created.
now. There's 10 of us now, so the work that Chika and I need to be involved in is reducing by the day. But before we go, speaking of businesses and the business book and resources, Tracy has a new resource.
I do actually. For people who are really keen on monetizing property here in Japan, I get a lot of questions. I get so many. So I've actually put everything that I know about getting into that business into one package. It's a due diligence package. So half the people I speak to, they have this idea of like, oh, I'm gonna do Airbnb, or I'm gonna monetize this. This will help you crystallize that vision and actually see, is this right for you, and save yourself a lot of money and effort right from the beginning. So it's not just assessing a property, it's assessing whether this is a viable business opportunity for you. And that's what this packet's all about. And I've got like a ton of calculators so that you can actually assess whether what the ROI is going to look like, look at what potential cash flows you're looking at. but also to get out of you questions that only you can answer. So help you to decide if this is the right thing for you. And then if it is, a checklist of all the things that you need to get done. So yes, there will be a link in the show notes. It's $97, so cheap as anything. And you get a ton of resources in there. So
How many people
yes.
do you think would have paid that $100 only to save themselves tens or hundreds of thousands of bucks, realizing all the moving parts there are? Maybe not for me.
Yeah, but I mean, look, it's all should be part of the planning, right? Like, just because Minpaku is not necessarily right for you, that's still a good dis you know, that still doesn't mean that buying a place for another reason isn't the right thing for you. So I guess it's to take this idea of, oh, I'm gonna put it on Airbnb and make a ton of money, and but give you the real talk, and see, all right, is the squeeze gonna be worth the juice for me and my particular goal?
Have you
So,
thought about A, B, C, D? Are you even
yeah,
aware that they exist?
exactly. What is the compliance, and what's this, and what's involved? And so that I'd give you all of that food. I mean, I've been doing this for more than a decade now, so yeah, it's all there for you.
Fantastic.
That's fantastic.
We will be linking to that, and people may download it at, well, they need to pay for it, but they are able to purchase it. And if you followed any of Tracy's presentations at the summit and some of the stuff that she lays out here on the podcast, you probably already know that you're going to get your money's worth and then some.
Well, I want to make it affordable, right? So, yeah.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy. Fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now, back to the podcast.
Yeah, we were talking about this in our group chat we have the other day about charging for initial consultations. We get so many inquiries that people just want to sort of pick our brain and have a chat. And, it's a solid 1 hour sort of conversation, sometimes 90-minute conversation. But I think some people in our chat were saying, well, we start charging now. We don't just accept any kind of.
Because very often that's what even happens to me. Very often they just say, oh, we haven't bought the property yet, but come with us for the inspection and tell us what's possible. But great, I'll do that, but you have to pay me. And then if you decide that you're buying that property and I'm going to do the job as a company, I'll happily deduct that fee from the contract or, something, but you have to pay me first, because otherwise, it's a half a day. it's not even an hour, you know, because you have to go somewhere and something. That's half a day.
That's something that real estate agents in Japan should be, I think, if there are any of them listening to this one in English, they should be paying attention to. When we start working with a new agent, now I'm doing a lot more consulting than the full-on purchase facilitation just because we're still swamped. So when I get in touch with a new agent, and I met a few of them at the summit last time, and we started working together, their instinct is, we'll happily service customers all over the country, even if we're based in Tokyo. We want to be foreigner friendly. We want to be out there. We do stuff in English. We'll go anywhere it takes. And I have to force them to charge for their time when they go out on these viewing trips because they're in the mentality that might have worked in and around Tokyo. But when you're serving foreigners, they're going to ask you to go to all corners of the country. You're going to be paying hundreds, tens and hundreds of thousands of yens in transportation expenses and hotels and the time, your time, which is valuable for a sale that may or may not happen, right? And you're going to get burned out. You're not going to work with us anymore. Just charge for it. People are expecting it and are okay with it.
I had to do that. I had to do that with my Shiho Shoshi, who I work with a lot. I put a lot of introductions, and she was going around doing a whole bunch of work for them. And then people go, "Oh, this is a bit hard. I'm just gonna do long-term
Exactly.
rental," for example. And she was getting burnt out and started getting mad at me. And I went, "Well, just charge people in advance." And it was really hard to get her over that hump to say, "Well, that's not what we do here in Japan." It's like, do it. It's like, you know. Yes, you can use that as a deducted off people if people use you for the whole thing. But for that initial investment in time, she has to go to the ward office. She has to sit there and take floor plans. That's even before people have decided to go ahead with their licensing. So
You
yeah,
see, all this has to be paid. Nobody's doing anything. As much as we like doing what we are
Oh, we
doing,
love
we
it,
need
but.
to get paid.
I'm probably the
Opposite.
exception here in that I do a lot of the stuff that I do for free, but people pay because I'm saying for free, but it's for the content, right? It's not really for free, but people pay for accessibility and for priority, right? So if you want to keep bombarding me with messages, what do you think about this property, that property, and who should I contact about this and that? I'll eventually get to them and answer you. But if you've really got a project that you're on and you want things to happen now or at a certain deadline, and you want, the advice to be contextual to your case and with everything that I know about you taken into consideration, then you pay for that.
I'm the opposite. I like, I'm typical real estate agents. We don't charge for the search process and taking people out, et cetera. I had a client recently from the US looking to buy basically a holiday house, and his budget's about 300 million, like 2 million US or 300 million yen. Looking for like, so we're doing these like, multi-million dollar mansions in Azabu area. They're 2, 3 LDK, but that's how much they cost now in like, in Aoyama and whatnot. And I spent like parking near there. I spent about 8 or 9,000 yen on just on car coin parking in that area. It's like 500 yen for 12 minutes with no cap, right? I mean, so we drive around, and but I kind of pre we had the Zoom call. Like he reached out to me. I understood sort of his situation. I'm like, hey, he's qualified. Let's do the Zoom call. After the Zoom call, I'm like, yep, he's qualified, and he's just here on a holiday. And I said, okay, cool. We'll go and look at some places. And I knew the chance of him buying is very low, especially on this trip, but maybe on the next trip. And what he told me in his story, it's me qualifying. It's all up to me qualifying someone to get my time. So I'll check with email. If they meet the requirements, then I'll do the call. A lot of emails that I get, people are in a different prefecture, or they don't have income, or they don't meet the, they are part-time work as well, whatever it is, a whole mix of stuff. Then I won't arrange the call. So I don't get that. But if they do get to the call stage and we do that, and I think, yep, they are a legitimate, they are a qualified lead, then I'll take it to the next step. They can get more of my time because, I think it's more likely I'll get the sale, and the commissions are 3% is the typical agency fee. So that's how I work. But I have to be strict on the qualification. I used to go and do anyone, right?
Yeah, I think we all started that way, probably, right?
But then you get better and you understand who is realistic and who is not. And so I'm better at that now. So if
Yeah,
I'm
listen, you mentioned that over time, we know real estate, we know how to sniff a good deal, we've all had businesses for quite some time, so we can kind of get the feeling fairly quickly, or at least a lot more accurately, of who might not be the best fit for us before we go down the path, right?
Well, I'm right now, I'm working with this lady who's looking to buy a place. And we've been searching, and we can't really find the property that meets her needs for the budget and the location. And when there's a bit of a mismatch between their expectation and what's actually available on the market, when we've looked at a dozen properties, literally, and nothing really aligns, and it's either you change your requirements or increase your budget. And now, just earlier today, I got a message from her saying she's walking around the streets and took a photo of one of the flyers. And her budget's more like 200 million yen. And she sent me one of like, and like 150 square meters and above for a house. And she sent me a photo of like this flyer that she saw for 100 million yen and like 110 square meters. And I'm like, this is so far off what you've been looking for and everything. And anything we saw that was like 120, 130, she's like, nah, it's too cramped, it's too small. So we've seen these ones and have ruled them out, which is where we've gotten to where we're at now. And she like just start when they're in the stage where it's like almost they just start sending re stuff without thought, saying, let's go look at this, let's go look at this. I also need to sell them, look, no, yeah, they're new to the business. So that's where I need to sort of give the professional advice and say, look, you need to sort of focus. Are you okay to go with this or not? We've seen comparables to this and they weren't good. This is not gonna meet your needs. Because I'm not going to go on this wild, this like people that say they're looking for a unicorn. I'm not a unicorn hunter, is my new expression.
I think, but don't they very quickly realize that that's just not feasible? I mean, I will go through the motions with people telling them that, I don't think that's doable, but let's see what we come up with. And then, quickly research results kind of prove.
Oh, definitely. But in this case, it's the search is, well, they want me to go out and spend another half a day to visit three properties and schedule. And that's so that's, and I need my assistant to arrange. So it costs me like, 10,000 yen just in assistant fees to coordinate and arrange these schedules, plus my day out and parking costs. And it's a whole, half day or day gone. I don't say wasted, but gone because, it's easy to do that. I'm okay doing that at the early stages. When I understand we're still exploring, I'm trying to understand the client's needs, and the client is still learning their needs. So if we visit, 4 to 8 properties or 10 properties, at the end of that, I think the client is at a much better stage of understanding what they want, and I'm also there with them. But now, when they sort of start to, go off on tangents or lose track, that's where I need to sort of re bring them back in and say, well, no, you're losing track. This is what we've seen. This is where we're at. Let's realign. Because otherwise I'll just, again, I'm hunting unicorns and with a, a family and three little kids, I need to be,
Yeah, we all have to
struggling
budget.
time.
We all have to
Boundaries
sort
and
of.
limits are required. Yes. Well, we have to, I think at least two or three of us have a meeting in about 3 minutes. So we will have to cut this one short. Thank
Awesome.
you for your time, and we shall see you again
We'll
shortly.
see
Like and
you. Thank
subscribe.
you. See
Like
you
and
next
subscribe.
week. Yes.
And buy Tracy's
Awesome.
package. Yes.
Oh,
Yes.
yeah, my package. Yes.
Well, she has
Yes.
all the
Yeah.
Sounds great.
So there you have it, some real nuggets of wisdom and solid advice there from the JREP crew, or at least I thought so. Hope this was of value to you as well. And of course, wishing you the best ever holiday season and Happy New Year. Looking forward to some much needed rest in the next couple of weeks. So apologies in advance for the upcoming radio silence. And we are definitely very much looking forward to serving you all again, fully recharged and rearing to go in 2025. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries,
or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku!